Welcome back to the Yoga Teacher Training Podcast. I'm Jeremy Devins, and here today I am with Sarah Hanawa.
Hi.
So Sarah is an amazing teacher I've met here in Venice, and she teaches at Shefa Yoga here. And I wanted to just sit down and chat. She wrote a book. She teaches amazing classes. She teaches all styles. So I thought Sarah would have some cool lessons and insights for us. So thank you for taking the time to meet with me.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. I'm excited to be here.
So I think the first thing that kind of stands out is just like writing a book is a huge deal. So anything you want to share about that process of creating your first book?
Totally. Well, it's poetry, so it makes it a little bit easier, you know, less like focus on organizing, you know, a story from beginning to end, right? So that helps. But it was definitely about like 8 years of me just writing, and I've always been a writer, like literally since I was just a teeny tiny baby. I would always write songs and like write poetry and stuff. I mostly started writing songs because I sing too, mostly just for fun, and then in my classes and stuff, as you know. And so I just always loved writing, and I just wrote a lot, got really into it, and then one day I was like, oh, I really should put it all together, and I started to. So it was probably about 2 years or so of me like really sitting down and putting it all together. Probably could have been faster, but there was a lot of procrastination, you know. And then finally one day, truthfully, I finished one of my TV shows, and I was like, oh, I gotta do something. And I just sat down and like really just fully did it all. And I did it through Amazon Publishing, and it was so easy. I had multiple friends kind of give me some advice on how to do it through there. And I literally went through like all of my journals. I often write poems for my Instagram posts, and I just do it right then and there. So I like went through all my Instagram posts, went through everything, and just kind of collected it all together and like very delicately put it all together.
Do you have a favorite poem?
Yes, probably. It's going to be in my next book, but then my favorite from this one, I don't have titles for any of them, but I do have one of my favorites. I don't have it memorized, though, because it's really long, but it's pretty much about kind of like the process of healing, right, and all the things that you kind of have to dedicate to and find discipline for in order to really pursue your healing journey and stick with it. You know, you know, I talk about taking cold showers and doing push-ups and loving myself and eating well and drinking water and putting down alcohol and drugs and all that kind of stuff and just really focusing on doing the things that make me feel really good. Because when I was doing all those things, I hated everything, including myself, you know? And so it really is a poem about that type of growth.
Is that your journey as well, like you're kind of talking to yourself through that poem in a way? Like,
absolutely. Yeah, and every time I read it, it's like a reminder of, okay, make my bed every morning, drink water, you know, do the things that I love, go to yoga class, you know, do your push-ups, love your body, even when it's changing, right? Our bodies are always changing, and that's one of the biggest things about like self-love and body positivity and loving your body. It's not just when it looks really good and it feels really good, right? It's loving the ever-changing and like ever-expanding physical body, emotional body, mental body, you know? Yeah. And so it's a big story of that.
Yeah. You know, one of my teachers would say that people come to yoga often because of they're going through some sort of transformation or maybe a crisis in their life or looking for some sort of meaning or purpose. Mm-hmm. And is that kind of what led you to practice as well?
It's like not intentionally, yes. Yeah. Someone else's intention was for that, though. Mm. So I was introduced to yoga when I was 15. I had just moved across country. I moved out of my mom and dad's house when I was 15, and my aunt and uncle took me in, and their really good family friend, Carolina, shout out Carolina, I always say she's who brought me to yoga, because it is. Her husband teaches yoga, and she thought it would really help me. I was going through, you know, such a massive change. I was dealing with a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, I have a lot of trauma from, like, living with my mom and dad and then moving out at such a young age and into a whole new environment. I moved across country and it was just like a really intense situation for me. And she brought me in and I was pretty hooked after the first time, but I wasn't instantly like, yes, this makes me feel mentally better.
Right.
You know, it definitely took time for me to realize that. I just have always been really active, and I thought it was really cool and fun and really hard.
Right. You were 15?
I was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then you got all the hormones of a teenager as well.
That too, exactly. Yeah. You know, and I also, one of the things when I first moved in with my aunt and uncle is they had me go on birth control. And so that really messes with your hormones a lot too.
Yeah.
So there was like so many things happening all at once, and I was like, ah. I like didn't know how to ground myself and take care of myself yet.
And then yoga was just kind of the physical exercise kind of thing at that point. Yeah. That's kind of how I came to it too, from the gym to yoga. Interested in spirituality, but it's like a nice bridge to get you into, you know, eventually if you go further, far enough, long enough, you end up finding the pranayama and the mantra and the...
Exactly.
What was that for you? Like, did it take a long time? Is it...
It took a few years. I mean, I definitely noticed there were some benefits, but I wasn't super into spirituality until I was introduced to chanting, like into kirtan. And so I was going all the time, and then I went to, it ended up like not working out so well living with my aunt and uncle. It was just a lot. I was a lot. They had two kids. It was a lot for all of us, so we decided on boarding school, and I took classes there. I had yoga every morning there. My teacher was awesome. She gave me my first copy of the Four Agreements, and so that's kind of where my spiritual practice started to open up a little bit more. And then I moved back. After I graduated high school, I stayed in, this was in Utah, I stayed there for a little while, and then I ended up moving back to Tahoe, which is where I had originally moved with my aunt and uncle. And I started going to a studio there, which is where I got my first teacher training. And my first class ever with chanting, I was literally just like crying. I was like, what is happening to me? Like, not just a little tears. Like, I was like, and it was the chant that I often start a lot of my practices with, Om Hari Om. It was chant to Ganesha. And I was like, who the fuck is this Ganesha? Like, and I'm like Googling him, getting super into it. And so I was like, 18 or 19, I think it was 18 at that time, and just like really looking into it all, started practicing every day, going in, and just got really, really dedicated to it because I loved the way that made me feel. I probably hadn't cried in like years.
Wow.
I don't know, I was like, I was very shut off. I was struggling with depression a lot. I was doing drugs and drinking, and then it really just like changed a lot for me, like flipped a switch.
Yeah.
You know, and then a year or two later, I got my teacher training there. My teacher gifted it to me.
Wow.
Yeah. She just Facebook messaged me one day. I hadn't gone to the studio in a little while because teacher trainings can be expensive. And I was like 19, living on my own. I didn't have any sort of support. And so I just couldn't afford to go anymore at that time. But I was still practicing at home and doing what I could. I was reading a lot of scriptures, a lot of books, stuff online, and she, yeah, just Facebook messaged me. She's like, hey, are you still in town doing a teacher training, and this is your life's purpose? Well, like, a really long message all about how it was my life's purpose, and she wanted to gift me the training, and so that's how I got my first teacher training.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I grew up in a very difficult childhood, no father, and depression, and similar things to some degree. And if it wasn't for the generosity of my teachers too, like, I did a scholarship, and yeah, I was fortunate to have generous teachers too. But it's I always try to give back in what I do now too, and try to find ways to give that back. But I think that's so beautiful. Like, that's an amazing gift that you got.
Amen.
Yeah, and you didn't. So doing the chanting, like, you didn't even know like what it was. You're just doing it. You're just.
No, yeah, I just showed up to the studio, and that studio was an all bhakti studio.
Oh, yeah.
And so every class had chanting in the beginning and the end. And I've, like I was saying, I've always sang. And so I loved that part. I was like at the, you know, top of my lungs, just like crying. And I would always cry for a while. And then that like really unlocked something in me. And then certain postures like pigeon pose and other things, I would always cry in those postures because I was just storing so much unprocessed emotions and trauma for, you know, so many years that it just really helped shift a lot in me. And the teacher training was really powerful for me because she made us chant alone and all together, and it was very based on mythology and philosophy, and I loved mythology. Like that first day when I was chanting and I was like, who's this Ganesh that we're chanting to? And I started getting into it. I started studying the stories and listening to MC Yogi. And, do you know MC Yogi?
Yeah.
I'm sure. And he does a lot of amazing songs where he tells the stories of all the different deities and stuff. And so I really loved that. And I just got really into it. And my teacher had us, like 20 suggested books for us to get for our teacher training. A lot included mythology, Myths of Thoughts, Asanas, my favorite book ever, highly recommend to everyone. Teaches you the stories of why we do those postures and why they're named what they're named, right, and kind of the fun stories behind them and the real true reasons behind them as well. And so I got all those books and just studied and loved it and just have been obsessed with it ever since. And that was like 10 years ago.
Nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's cool how like even not knowing what you're chanting or what it means, like there's a powerful effect.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about your classes is you just share the chanting. Like you don't dance around it or whatever. Like it's actually so rare. Like I've been to so many classes over the years, like I almost never hear chanting in classes and asana-based classes. So I love that you do that, and it's like it's even more beautiful now to know like that where that started and where that comes from, because it comes from a very pure place. But like, what would you say to like people who are the teachers are like they want to bring in more spirituality, want to bring in more chanting or other aspects of yoga beyond the asana, but they feel like awkward about it or like, you know, people won't like that. But your classes fill up, like people love it, right? And you do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest things is knowing that you're probably going to do it by yourself for a little while. Like, you have to kind of let go of the fear of that someone might not chant with you, right? And so just, you have to just come in with that confidence of, you know what, I'm just going to do it because it's what I believe in. And yeah, just kind of having to let go of the hesitations of it and know that it might be met with hesitation, and that's okay. I've had multiple people come to my class, you know, I instantly start chanting. I say, welcome, I'm Sarah. All of my offerings begin with chanting. Come to a seat. I've had people walk out and go talk to the front desk and be like, what is going on? Because all my friends work the front desk, so they tell me, you know, they're like, what is going on? Like, I don't know if I like this. And they're like, just give it a try. And they go, and now they come to my class every time.
Hmm.
You know, when something is new and vulnerable, it's going to be met with hesitation a lot of the time, right? Because it's stirring something up inside of you that you're not used to, right? And you just have to understand that people might walk out. Not everybody's going to like you. I think that's the biggest thing about teaching and what I was taught in my teacher trainings is to just be authentic and do what's true for you and don't try to be something that you think other people are going to like. Not everybody's going to like my class. That's totally okay. But the people that do are going to love it, and they're going to feel that it comes from a pure, loving place. And they're going to get the most benefits from it. Just like people that resonate with other people, they're going to get the most benefits from those people.
Yeah. And then you usually start with chanting, and you end with a prayer. Or
the Guru Mantras.
Guru Mantras.
Yes.
So, I have not heard that specific way that you do it before. Mm-hmm. So where does that come from?
It comes from my teacher, Mike Richardson.
Okay.
He now owns the studio that I first got trained in, actually, and he taught at my first teacher training as well. Mm. He taught us assist, which was really powerful to be taught by a man because you learn trauma-informed touch right away, right? Because as touch in general, right, as a yoga teacher, it's very important to be very gentle. Anything can be triggering, right, in a yoga class, in anywhere, right, in life, but especially in yoga, right? The chanting can be triggering, touch especially can be triggering. So it's so important to go about it a very specific way. And then as a man, you have to be even more careful. So he taught us that, and he also taught us how to create playlists and stuff like that and some sequencing and the Guru Mantras and some chanting. And so on his website, actually, I think it's just MikeRichardson.com, he has the Guru Mantras on there, and I just kind of studied it and memorized it, and he always did it, and I always loved it, and I've just done it every single class since.
It's really sweet. It's some version of coming from the Vedas or Vedic mm-hmm. texts or Upanishads maybe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what is it? So, how, so say it.
It's Guru Brahma, okay. Guru Vishnu, Om Guru Devo Maheshwaraha, Om Guru Sakshat Parambrahma, Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. And then I always add in Om Namo Narayana. Wow, my brain just blanked for a second. May we all be at peace. May the whole world be at peace. And I added that in because I just love that.
Oh, it's so beautiful. It's such a nice way to end the class. And you don't say namaste, right?
No, I do.
Oh.
After, yeah, okay. At the very end. I just load you with a ton of information first. I always say, I love you, I love you, I love you first. Oh, that's right. And then namaste.
And that is that part of that same tradition? Like you've said something like, my religion is love or something like this.
I say, so bhakti is yes. the yogic path of love and devotion.
Yeah.
And bhakti pretty much just means to love for love's sake. So that's why I always end all my classes, to love with no intentions, to love with no expectations, to love for love's sake. And then I say, I honor you, I love you, I love you, I love you. And that just came out the first time I taught. The whole thing just came out the first time I taught, and I've done it ever since. It was just a very, like, channeled message
yeah.
that just came out. People are always like, where did that come from? I'm like, I don't know, source itself. It right. just literally just came through and when I opened up my mouth to finish my first class, and I've done it ever since, thousands of classes later.
Do you feel like you're channeling when you teach?
I am, fully.
Yeah.
I've never planned a class in my life.
Right.
Like every once in a while, I'll come in with one idea, like one posture. But even then, usually I end up not doing it.
Yeah.
Like if I come in with some sort of idea, it just doesn't, it doesn't come to be because I'm just so fully present and fully channeling. And I just feel the energy of everyone there and just kind of read off of it, see what people are needing. Sometimes I ask in the beginning if there's any parts of their body that people want to focus on a little extra, if the small class is a little smaller.
Yeah.
Because if it's really, if there's 40 people, I can't, everyone right. will be like, ah, you know.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I'll go off of like whatever we're chanting about or, yeah, just kind of, it just comes through.
In the beginning, did you plan more?
No, I never did. Never. Yeah, I think my first class I ever taught, I had planned a little bit and I had it like written down, I had the journal next to me. And I still even then was like branching away from it. And for me personally, not everybody's the same, but for me personally, I feel like I'm not fully present in the yeah. experience if I have something planned. Because also, like shit happens all the time and you don't know who's going to show up to your class. If
yeah.
you have some like crazy thing planned and then the people that show up are not, like that space is not available for them, then you're not being present to hold the space that they're needed, right? And I think yeah. that's the most important thing about teaching is you're not teaching people how to do anything, really. You're holding space. Like, that's what it is to be a yoga teacher. It's to hold love, to hold space, and have people kind of experience a journey. Everything I say is kind of a suggestion, mm-hmm. right? And from there, you can kind of pick and pull, right? That's how I feel
yeah.
about teaching.
I totally agree. And I find that when you teach in that way, that you don't have to do as much, you don't have to try as much, you don't have to impress anybody,
mm-hmm.
and it's easier to teach more, it's easier to keep teaching, it's like you don't get burned out,
because mm-hmm.
it's not you doing it.
Yeah. People are always like, oh, I love that thing you did, and I'm like, uh-huh. what did we do? You know, like,
yeah,
what did we just
right?
do? I don't even remember.
Yeah, totally.
You know.
There's there a general like template in your head though? Like
there is.
We're not going to start in handstand probably, right?
No. Yeah, so I do have a general template
yeah.
and I think in ways it's based off of Baron Baptiste
mm-hmm.
And his formula, and so that was something we really were taught in my teacher training. And so I still have like all of my teacher training manuals and they're from, you know, 9-10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I still have them all and the sequencing that they provide, it's pretty much like warm up, you know, so warm up, maybe some flows, sometimes sunbees, sunbees. I very rarely do sunbees or sunbees,
mm-hmm.
But every once in a while. But yeah, pretty much just warm up, flow, maybe a peak pose, definitely a little bit of core usually. Two back bends, and then some standing postures sometimes in there, usually. And then I always do pigeon for 2.5 to 3 minutes, always. It's like nothing, I never change that. I've done that forever, so important. And then a cool down, which is, that's a part of my cool down. And I usually have people do it at their own pace. I do inversion, back bend, twist, maybe one more juicy something, and then Shavasana.
Yeah, right. So you have a kind of outline, mm-hmm. you can easily add to it, subtract from it.
Exactly.
What about pigeon says, like, you have to do it every time? Like, it's absolutely, like...
Well, our body remembers everything, right? Our body keeps a score. And so our hips are one of those spaces in our body. Our hips, our lower back, are one of those spaces that we store the most trauma. Women tend to more than men, but everybody stores trauma in this space. Yeah. And it's also, for me personally, was one of the most transformative. I would always cry for like years. I mean, probably like 7 years. I was crying every single time that I did that posture. And my teachers always taught it too. I always grew up always doing pigeon. And anytime I take a class and we don't have pigeon, I feel like I need it, you know, and I sneak it in there somehow when I'm practicing or I do it after. And so that's the main thing. It's just there's so much stored there and we need to release it. And it's also one of those spaces that, although it's difficult, you can find surrender a lot of the time.
Right.
You know, holding something else is a little harder for like 2.5, 3 minutes. And I always think it's really important to have that moment of like pure yin, of just absorption. Right? Yin means to absorb. So it's like to just fully absorb the experience and really integrate everything that we just worked towards and all that energy that we stored up, like stirred up, and now we get to sit down and just really release it. And that's also why typically always after pigeon we scream.
Yeah. I like that you do that. It's and second chakra, the energy, emotions, all that moving through the body. That's awesome. And then one thing I've been, you know, I work with yoga teachers a lot, people in training a lot, and I hear it all the time of like, how do you go from demoing things and needing to feel the pose in your own body? And I know you're probably way beyond this point, but like, I'm curious like what you would say to somebody who's like, I want to focus on the energy in the room. Mm-hmm. I want to read the students. I want to be adaptive, like you're saying, but maybe they kind of stuck to their mat and they feel they want to feel it in their bodies and they can't quite know what to say if they don't feel it themselves to teach a class.
Totally. I still struggle with that, actually. I mean, I've been teaching for almost 10 years and I still, when I'm doing more complex flows, if I don't do it in my body, I'm always going to forget something. But if I forget something, I'm like, oh, I forgot it. You know, I'm human. Oh, well. You know, I always say that. And then sometimes other people will remember and they'll do it. And I'm like, oh yeah, thank you for reminding us. That's what we did. Or I try to bring it in later. I would say the first thing is if you need to do it in your body, try doing it off of your mat, right? Walk around the room, do it next to somebody, do the parts that you feel you really need to, and don't do the parts that you feel like you don't, you know? Like if your warm up is just a couple things on each side before you're switching, you're not getting into intense flows yet. You know, try to walk around the room and hold space during those times. And then during your more peak flows that you feel are a little more intense, a little more creative, you feel you kind of need to feel it in your body in order to do it, then do it.
Right.
You know, maybe walk around the room. I do that a lot where I'm just doing it next to people. And so I'm still kind of getting off my mat and being a part of the space, but still doing it in my body so I don't forget.
Right. And then things like down dog, you probably don't need to demo. You've done it enough.
Yeah, I pretty much never do down dog. Every once in a while, if I'm like, oh, this feels good. You know, exactly. I never do vinyasas.
Right.
For me, mostly about that is I'm going to run out of breath.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to get tired. I'm going to run out of breath if I'm doing everything, you know, especially the harder things like a vinyasa flow. So I usually will do the first two to demonstrate because you never know who's new,
yeah,
right? And if I notice there's a lot of people that could use some assistance in form, then I'll just kind of stop everyone and have them watch, and I'll do it, and then we'll redo it, and have everyone do it.
Right, and you get mixed levels in your classes, right? Mm-hmm. And you can adapt to everybody. I like that you give the options for everybody. I've had a shoulder thing in the last couple months, so I've been like, can't really do a lot of shoulder stuff.
Yeah.
never felt singled out or judged or anything in your class or at Sheffa at all. Like, mm-hmm. Sheffa is an awesome studio. And what are you looking for when you're watching students? How do you know if the class is going well or not? How are you reading the room?
Totally. I watch if they're doing it. Yeah. Right? That's the biggest thing, the biggest indicator. If they're not doing what you're suggesting, like what you're saying, then you probably need to tone it down. You know, if they're in child's pose a lot, mm-hmm. they're taking a break, they're sitting down, you're probably maybe, like if a large chunk of the room is. You know, if there's always going to be a couple people that need more breaks as, you know, there's new people. I think that's one of the biggest things. And then it's just an energy thing. Can you hear their breath? Can you feel their energy? Are they flowing together? Is a lot of people really off? Can you slow down or speed it up so that everyone kind of flows together and finds that collective space a little bit more?
Yeah. What would you say is like your sort of overarching philosophy of like why we do yoga?
Because it makes me a lot nicer to people. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest spaces is, I think everybody, it's different for everybody. You know, everybody has a different why. One of my favorite quotes I've ever heard is the whys start with why. Right? And so every day that you show up on your mat, you're going to have your why, and it might always be different. Just with teaching, right? Everybody's going to have a different reason why they teach. For me, it's love. Right? It makes me easier to love myself, makes it easier for me to love other people. All I want to do is express and share and exchange love. Every moment that I touch someone, it's love, right? Everything comes down to that for me. Some people, it's going to be, you know, movement, knowledge, helps with their anxiety, whatever it is. I think always the best thing to do is figure out your why from your true, deep, authentic place and go from there. You know, sometimes someone's why is just going to be, I want to move today. And sometimes that's my why. If I'm feeling restless, anxious, there's a lot going on, maybe I had too much coffee, I'm like, okay, I got to go to class. You know, I just need to move my body. I need to sweat. That's all I want today. Sometimes maybe I'm a little down and I'm going through a heartbreak or a tough situation, a big change in my life. I need to go release. Or maybe if I'm feeling a little depleted, I'm here to receive. Right? Our why is always going to be a little bit different. And I think it's just honoring what's authentic for you in each moment.
Yeah. And I love getting to practice a lot of variety of styles. Mm-hmm. Like some days you feel more yin, restorative. Some days it's vinyasa. And you teach all of those different styles.
I do.
So mm-hmm. What has that been like for you? Like learning those styles, practicing them? Like, is it too much? You know, some teachers think like you should focus more on a specific style or a niche or focus on being good at, you know, this is what you're known for. Mm-hmm. But to you, like, what draws you to want to do a wide variety of styles?
I think that we're just, especially me, but all people, we're just so multifaceted and we're so different every single day. We're just ever changing and expanding. Sometimes we want vinyasa all the time for years. And then we're like, you know what? I need to slow down. I need some hatha. I need some yin. I need some restorative. I need a little more gentle. That's how it was for me. I practiced heavy vinyasa for years. And then I took a hatha teacher training and Shivananda hatha. So it's like way more mellow. There's only 12 postures. They teach you a lot of yin, a lot of restorative, a lot of prenatal, you know, how to do it to kids. Like, they give you such a wide variety of how to do things. And I slowed my practice down so much after that. And I started getting really into yin and restorative. And I realized how much stronger my handstands became, how much stronger other aspects of my practice became, because I was giving my body that moment to rest and restore, right? Yin and yang is everything, right? It's the balance of, most people know what yin and yang is, right? Just the balance of life. Yeah. And it's the same with our physical practices, right? I think if you're lifting weights, make sure you stretch. And if you're running a lot, make sure you stretch, you slow down, right? And it's the same with yoga and why I teach as much of it as I can. You know, there's so many days when my, like I was saying, my why is just different, you know, and it's the same for everybody. I have a lot of people that only go to my yins. I have people that only go to my vinyasas, and I have a huge chunk of people that go to both, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I loved that. In my training, in my studio I trained at, like, they had all the different styles and could go from one to the other. And it's like every day is a little different, so you need different things every day.
Exactly.
And the more we kind of go too far in one direction, we start to get imbalanced, of course. So we need to balance it out, yin and yang.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I think especially we live in a yang-based world.
Yes.
Right? Everything is so quick, immediate gratification, you know, lists, rigidity, just get things done. If you're not getting things done, you should feel, you know, terrible about yourself.
Yeah.
Right? You should feel lazy if you're not doing something every moment of every day.
Right.
You know, and that just causes all this, like, unnecessary shame and guilt around rest. Yet rest is so important. What I was taught in my Shivananda training was, in the five key elements of yoga, one is proper relaxation, right? There's a reason we always have Shavasana at the end of every single class. And so that's something I always talk about in my yins and my restoratives, is how important it is to rest without feeling guilty, right? Without feeling like you fully have to fill the space with energy, with something, right? And a lot of time when you go to a vinyasa, you're often kind of shedding something, especially in heated. Right, you're moving so quickly a lot of the time, you're sweating a lot, you're breathing really deeply, you're releasing, you're shedding. And so for me, my intention a lot of the time when I'm teaching yins and restoratives is to receive for them, like for the people to receive, to just give yourself that time to, okay, I'm resting, I'm integrating, I'm receiving, I'm calling everything in, because I'm shifting my energy all the time, and now I just get to be with it.
And in the restorative, or in the yin classes and sound healing classes of yours I've been to, you do like some vocal channeling, singing, Reiki. So, and I, you know, I, in my opinion, like, you have like a high level of skill in that and the vinyasa and the hatha. So it's really cool. And I feel like you've dedicated a lot of your life and energy to, like, have a level of mastery in yoga. But to have those skills, which are kind of adjacent to yoga, like, share more about, like, learning that, or what inspired you to bring that in, like the channeling and the singing and the sound healing and then the Reiki as well.
Totally. I've always felt like I did energy work. Like, I have all these cute little old videos of myself just doing energy work on people before I was, like, attuned with the Reiki symbols. And so it's something I was always interested in. And then when I was teaching in Tahoe for a long time, my good friend Emily Weir, she does sound healing.
I know Emily.
You know Emily Weir?
Yeah.
That's amazing. She just texted me this morning. I love her.
She's very good.
She's insane. So her and I would do sound healings pretty much every weekend. I mean, not every weekend, every month we would have a workshop where we did sound healing. And, you know, I always loved the singing, the chanting. I did that in all of my classes. She loved that. And we ended up meeting because we lived together. I, like, moved into a house that she lived in. And she was like, oh, I do sound healing. I was like, oh, I teach yoga. Let's do something together. Neither of us had ever taken each other's classes before, and we just did a workshop. Didn't talk about it once before, and we just did it. And it was amazing, and we loved it, and we just kept doing it from then. And that was, like, 7 or 8 years ago.
Wow.
I think that was maybe 7 years ago. Yeah, and so it was just one of those divine interactions where that just happened so much in my life where it's not even like I was drawn to it. You know, it just came to me. It was like smack in my face, like, this is what you're doing now. You know, even with teaching yoga, that's what happened. And the first class I ever taught, I was in high school. I wasn't even trained. I was at my boarding school, and I had been practicing for a few years, and one day my teacher calls me, and she's like, Sarah, my dog shit and threw up everywhere, and she's so sick, my house is disgusting, I can't teach. Is there any way you can teach the yoga class? I'm like 17. I'm like, sure, why not? It's like 5 minutes before class is supposed to start. I'm like, okay, no problem. And I did it, and it was fine. I just channeled, I guess, and just taught what I knew, and people liked it, and I loved it, and I was like, oh, I think I'm going to be a yoga teacher. And then a couple years later, my teacher randomly messages me on Facebook, gives me my teacher training, and then I got my second teacher training from my aunt and uncle. It was my 21st birthday present. They were like, you can go anywhere in the world. We see how dedicated you are to this. And I was already sober at that time. I didn't drink or anything, And they were like, oh, you know, you're turning 21. I feel like this is what you want to do. We'd love to gift you another training, and you can go wherever you want, and you can choose it. And so I ended up going to the Shivananda Ashram in the Bahamas.
Wow.
And then same, like, I've just moved into a house with Emily. She happened to be there. I loved sound healing. I just kind of started getting into it on my own, playing her bowls, doing them with her. And then when I moved out here a few years ago and I started at Sheffa, I met Amber Bonham, mm-hmm. who does amazing Reiki and sound healing here, and started doing sound with her a little bit. And then I was offered, so I work in treatment centers and in mental health facilities. So I was offered a sound healing position, and I didn't have my own set of bowls yet. So Amber let me borrow some of her bowls for a little while. And then she was like, I want to certify you in Reiki. And then she did. She just gifted me that.
Wow.
And so it's like just always boom, smack in my face. Like I don't have, you know, I can't say that I've like been even drawn to certain things and been so interested in it. It just has come to me and I'm like, okay, this is what I do now. You know, and then I end up buying myself a set of bowls and started picking up all these different sound baths. I just got offered another weekly sound bath today.
Wow.
At one of the facilities I work at, and yeah, it's just so crazy. I'm like, I don't know, it just comes.
Yeah, there's a level of allowing that you're doing, not resisting.
Yeah,
maybe through your practices and your lifestyle, like it's allowing that to come through, right?
Totally. I think that it's life is just so much about surrender. Yoga is so much about surrender. And of course, discipline is so important, but I think that surrender is a level of discipline, right? I think it's like the highest form of discipline is to surrender, right? To just let go and be like, you know what? I trust in my skill set and what's going to be right for me and what's coming for me. And all I ever wanted was to make money doing what I love and not have to do anything else.
Right.
And I spent so much time doing things I didn't love, and I'm so grateful to be in a space where I only make money doing what I love.
Yes.
And it just keeps coming.
Right. That was a dream for me for a long time as well, and grateful to be there as well. But for people who are wanting that, what could you, is it the surrender is a big piece of that, allowing the, there's a level of like following a desire, there's a thread that you love the yoga, so you keep going.
And, right. Yeah, I mean, you have to put in the work,
right?
You can't just sit at home and be like, everything will come to me. Yes, you say that. Yes, you manifest. But you also have to go out in the world,
yeah.
Right? Meet people, you know, try things, put your name out there, put in the work, put in the discipline, you know, and then the universe is all vibration, right? So if you're putting that vibration out there, it's going to come back.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a long time where I lived in such a scarcity space. I'm still there in ways. Like, I definitely still catch myself in those moments
right.
of being like, am I worthy of this? Oh, am I worthy of living in this apartment that's probably too expensive? But you know what? I love it so much, so I'm going to make it happen. You know, more things will come my way. And I think, yeah, it's just so much surrender and letting go of the fear and stepping into the space of, you know what, I am worth it. Because there's plenty to go around, whether it's work, whether it's money, whether it's opportunity, whether it's people, there's plenty of it out there. Yeah. Whatever it is that you want, it's out there. And you can let it in. You know, I waitressed for a really long time while teaching full time. I was like, I didn't even have a car. I was like hitchhiking to teach. You know, I was doing everything I could to make it happen. I think that we let fear get in the way a lot and little inconveniences. Like if I got in, let it get in my way of, oh, I don't have a way to get back from teaching, you know,
right.
I'm just not going to do it. Then I wouldn't be where I'm at, but I was like, you know what, I'm going to hitchhike. It'll be fine. And it was, I lived in a small town. I wouldn't do that here in LA, lived in a small town then. But if you really put your mind to something and put in the work, you'll find a way to do it. You know, I hitchhiked every day to my first teacher training until I met someone there that was like, oh, I live right next to you. I'll just pick you up on the way. Right? You just have to want something enough to really go for it.
Yeah.
And stop letting so much fear get in the way, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That resonates a lot for sure. And I've had times teaching where it's like, I didn't have any resources. When I started teaching, it was like, I'll teach for free. I'll teach anywhere.
Yep.
take the bus, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, anyone needs a sub all day, just sub in classes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then eventually I get better and build an audience and like can help more people and can grow it. But yeah, it's that sort of allowing that process of like it being challenging at first, but also not like getting into that mentality of like it has to be hard, I have to struggle. Or
exactly.
That kind of tension about it, right? There's still a sense of maintaining an ease, and I think yoga is one of the best means to like kind of keep the vessel open and mm-hmm. keep the body open, the channels open to allow that to come through. But sometimes it's hard. Sometimes we get down and...
Absolutely. I mean, we're human.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And there's a lot going yes. on in the world and in ourselves. You know, yeah. it's really intense to be human. And they say that's a part of our yoga experience too, is to understand that intensity of being human and learning to surrender into it and learning to love it and to kind of ride the waves of experiencing anything, right? Of just experience itself.
Yeah. Well, speaking of humans, as humans, what do you think about all the AI stuff happening now where it's like, I could see in a couple of years, there could be AI that is like, as good as any recorded yoga teacher. Mm-hmm. Like, it can just learn from all the recorded yoga videos and just make new ones mm-hmm. from AI. And it could be even, like, images. It could look like a video of me teaching, but it's all AI. I don't think that's that far off. So then, mm-hmm. like, what role do you think, like, if there's teachers listening who are, like, afraid of their job security, afraid of the future of, like, being able to do yoga or teach yoga anymore, you know, what do you think about this at all?
I don't, but I can. Yeah. I think there will always be a demand for human connection.
Yeah.
You know, but if it makes someone feel safer to practice from the comfort of their own home, why shouldn't they?
Yeah.
You know, I think whatever gets you closer to the truth and closer to yourself and closer to source, God, whatever you believe in, is great. If that's through AI, great. If it's through human connection, great. I think that, like I said, there's enough of everything to go around that I don't think we should be scared of losing our ability to teach in person. You know, there will always be places like Sheffa. There will always be places that will maintain that human connection. We are social creatures, and at the end of the day, the majority of us want that interpersonal human experience, right? And I think that YouTube is amazing, AI is amazing, science is amazing, humans creating all this stuff, amazing, right? And wherever it takes it, you know, is where it's going to go.
Right. There's no substitute for being in the electromagnetic field of
exactly.
people. And, like, the first time I did a meditation class in a group, because I'd only done it, like, on audio before, I mm-hmm. found online years ago, and going to actual group, and, like, everyone in this room is, like, doing the same thing, holding the same intention,
breathing the same breath,
right?
You know, it's there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
And I think everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people are like you or like me, where we maybe start online a little bit and we feel a little bit safer online. I personally don't even know if YouTube was around yet like at all when I first started. YouTube's been around for a little while now, but I don't think it was like a big
no.
yoga thing. And so I did start out in person. There's a lot of people that they don't have the confidence to go in person yet. And they're like, okay, I'm going to learn some things at home first. I'm going to get my form correct. I'm going to feel confident in my body and myself and my practice. And then I'm going to go in person. Then once they have that like in-person experience, they're like, whoa, this is so different. Especially when you're screaming and you're chanting, you're breathing, you're sweating together. There's just like, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it's nice to have the options, because there's a lot of times where, okay, I can't go to a class in person. There's only this many time slots in the day, and that doesn't work with my schedule. I have, you know, 25 minutes. I want to move my body. I want to breathe. I want to reconnect with myself and ground down. I'm going to go on YouTube, or I'm going to listen on Spotify or Apple or wherever, you know, they have someone guiding them.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that we have those options too.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. And yeah, I also, when I was starting to learn, there was like 3 YouTube yoga videos.
Yeah.
So like Dr. Oz had one. I was doing it. And yeah, it's now it's everywhere and everyone can access it, and that's wonderful. And you know, some teachers might feel like insecure or scarcity about it, of like, especially newer teachers. They're like, there's already, this person's been doing it for 20 years or 10 years. Or like, what would you say to a brand new teacher who's like overwhelmed by like, why would anyone listen to me or come to my class?
I think come back to your why, right? Why do you want to do it? Why do you want to teach yoga? If there's a true authenticity behind your why, then it's going to work out just fine. You know, and it's normal to be afraid, right? We're all going to be afraid. We all have those fears. When I first moved to LA, oh my gosh, I was so nervous about teaching because I came from a small town and I became very well known there. I felt like I was like, okay, I want to do more. So I picked one of the biggest cities in the world, came here. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anything. Wow. And there's so much yoga. There's everybody and their mother has a yoga teacher training. We know that, right? But also, it's ever expanding how many people want to practice too. And like you said, you did in the beginning, you know, do it for free, right? Get your word out there. Get your love out there. Get your why out there. Let people know why they should come to you, you know, and then you, that's how you build your confidence, is choosing yourself, right? We all doubt ourselves, but every single time that you choose yourself and you do what you believe in and what you love, you build that self-confidence, and then people are going to feel that around you. You know, I was so nervous when I came, and I didn't even know, one of the biggest, I was like, where do I even want to teach?
Yeah.
You know, because I'm very particular about where I teach and where I share my energy. And for me, it's like everything, you know, where I spend my money, all that kind of stuff, everything I believe in. And so it's the same with teaching yoga. I want to be in a space where, okay, I believe in the values of this place and the values of the owner. I believe in the owner. That's someone I can look at and believe in. You know, I don't want to be in a space where I don't like the person I'm working with or working for because our values are not aligned, right? And so for me, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even know where to go. And I just went and I just met people. People told me where I should go. I checked it out. I went there. I, you know, just put my name out there and tried. And I was denied a bunch in the beginning. And then they ended up, you know, contacting me later and be like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. So many people recommended you. I should have just, you know, at least taken your class. But usually I don't take people that don't have a 500 teacher training, because I don't have a 500. I have two 200s. And I've just spent so much time teaching that I haven't always like sat down and taken another teacher training. Because you can learn anywhere, right? I used to always take my journal anytime I took a class. And I would write down, oh, I liked that transition from that to that. Oh, I liked that little sequence. Write that down. Ooh, I love that thing they said. Ooh, who is that they mentioned? Ask them questions afterwards. You know, always stay curious, right? When you're teaching, when you're learning, always stay curious. There's always more to learn. There's so much out there, right? Like, I still have so much to learn. I'm always like, I, what do I even know? I don't know anything at all. You know, I just have some suggestions here and there. This has kind of worked for me. Maybe it'll work for you. Maybe not. Who knows, right? We all need something different. And so there's always going to be someone that wants what you have to offer.
Yeah.
It might just take a little while to find it, and that's okay. But those people will always be there, I think, if it's coming from a true and authentic place. If you're like, I want to teach yoga for money, for fame, it's probably not going to work out that well,
right?
You know? But if it's coming from a true, authentic place, oh, this made such a difference in my life, I want to offer that to other people, then it'll always work out, right? There will always be people there.
Yeah, and I think it's so important to continue to stay present with what that is. Mm-hmm. It's always evolving, of like, the work I'm going through now requires a different sort of practice, different levels of different skills than I had to go through past transformations.
And, absolutely.
And it's like continues to evolve, and that allows there to be more to share and more to teach. But if that stops, then the teaching starts to run dry. Mm-hmm. And that's where practice, the regular practice, is so important.
So important. I think that's one of the biggest things I suggest to anybody who teaches. You're always a student. Mm-hmm. We're always a student, right? In any aspect of our lives, really, but I think especially yoga, there's nothing really to master, right? They say yoga is the journey of the self, through the self, to the self. The self is ever expanding, ever changing, right? Universe, always expanding, always changing. Nature, always expanding, always changing. Therefore, there's always something to learn, right? I will always take class, always, always, always. And you're going to take class and be like, I did not like that at all. And that's okay. And that's something you can learn about you, right? Okay, what was it in me that created that response, right? Why didn't I enjoy it? And that doesn't mean you have to go back, right? We're not going to resonate with everybody, and that's totally okay, you know? But it will always teach you something about you, and whatever you learn about yourself is something you can offer on the mat as a teacher.
Totally. Yeah, and different teachers will just resonate with different people. Yeah. People would come to my class in Austin, I'd say, if you like my class, go to my mentor down the road. Yeah. She's way better than me. And they'd be like, eh. It's like, no, we like you.
Yeah.
It's like, that was a huge lesson for me in my teaching of like, oh, it's just, you know, people you resonate with, whatever the reason. And if newer teachers don't ever put themselves out there, then those people might never find a teacher they resonate with, you know?
Yeah, because they're not coming for, I mean, they're coming for the yoga, but at the end of the day, they end up coming for you, right? Maybe the first time, because they don't know you yet, they're coming for yoga. But what keeps people around is your personality. It's not even necessarily your teaching style, right? It's your energy, your personality, your voice, your love. That's what they're coming for at the end of the day. You know, the way I teach is so different all the time. You know, I have a general kind of style, but like I teach so many different styles. But at the end of the day, they're coming for my personality, for my love, and what it is that I'm giving that I have to offer to everyone. Yeah. It's not necessarily the way that I sequence postures together. That doesn't matter. Like, that stuff doesn't really matter at the end of the day. It's who you are that they're coming for. And that's what I was always taught, especially my first teacher training. They're like, they're going to come for you, your authenticity, your personality. How you put everything together doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you want it to make sense and feel good in the body. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. They're coming for you.
Yeah, and it's your presence. Like, I wouldn't consider you like a... Your personality overshadows the class.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you have a personality, everyone does, but
yeah.
It's like a certain presence that, like I interviewed one of my mentors, Cable. He teaches the Big Gay Yoga Church in Austin, and he has a big personality, like character, like lots of jokes and like very colorful and playful and fun. And like you have personality, but it's more like calm, chill, but like deep and, you know, spiritual, and you bring in the chanting. And it's just you being yourself, and that's what really resonates when you can feel like the teacher is really sharing themselves. I think I totally agree with that.
Yeah, because I like so many different teachers too, and some of my favorite teachers are loud, a little obnoxious, you know, really like powerful, funny, and I love that. And then some of my favorite teachers are really quiet, really reserved, don't really say a lot, but have so much power behind them, you know, and I resonate so much with both.
Yeah.
Right, I love both of those styles so much and both of those people so much because of what they have to offer.
Yeah.
You know, you're never really just searching for one style of person, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because we're always changing, right? No person is just one style of person, right?
Totally.
We all have so many different interests and skill sets and days when we're so different and we always need something a little bit different. So there's days where I'm like, okay, I need something a little more chill. I'm going to go to that teacher that I know is a little more chill. Okay, I need to like have my ass kicked and I need to be yelled at a little bit. I'm going to encourage, you know, yell at in an encouraging way.
Right.
And I'm going to go to them. You know, I think it's great to have all the options.
Yeah, and then within the style you teach, like you stick to that style, but you still have your personality. So like you're not going to throw in a bunch of chaturangas in a restorative class.
Yeah.
But you will have your personality and your expression, authenticity in it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and whether I'm teaching in the studio or I'm teaching in mental health facilities, like I'm the same person, right? And I offer a lot of the same things. We're always going to chant, you know, because that's something that I believe in more than anything in the world.
Mm.
So I'm always going to do that. And those are the places, too, where you're like, I'm probably going to do this alone for a little while. And kind of like you said, about my first experience, I didn't know what I was doing. And same with them, like, many of these people I'm working with in these mental health facilities have never chanted, never done yoga, don't know what we're saying. I mean, I always say what we're saying. You know, I always explain it, and that's something I think is really important, so they don't think we're, I don't know, calling upon demons right. or something strange. You never know what someone's, you know, if they've come from a cult background, or that's a part of being trauma-informed, right? Is you don't know someone's previous experience, and giving them as much, you know, kind of like very blatant on the table information, right? If I'm saying these words, this is what it means. This is why we're saying it, you know, not just this is what we're doing, right? And then they can choose from there if they want to participate or not. And sometimes when you do it on your own for a while, they're going to see how it feels in their body, because you feel that vibrational energy from chanting, whether you're doing it yourself or you're just in the room with it, right? It's the same like when you listen to music. It's any sort of vibrational sound is transformative. Everybody knows that, right?
In the beginning was the word, and the word created universe.
And that word was Om.
Which may, some people may say it was love, was actual, that was the word. Who knows? But Om. So thank you for taking the time to meet with me.
Of course. Thank beautiful. You so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So where can people keep in touch with you and keep up with what you're doing?
I think my website and Instagram is the best space. My name's just Sarah Hanala. And you look up something similar to that, Hanala like Honolulu, you'll find it. My website has my links to everything. Spotify, I have tons of playlists people love from my classes and just in general. Fun music to listen to. My website has my book on there, which is just connected to Amazon. It's on Amazon. I also sell my book at Sheffa. I teach at Sheffa for my public classes. I also do privates and FaceTime privates, things like that. And yeah, my website is kind of the best place, and my Instagram will have all the workshops, events, all the other different things that I do all the time. Yeah.
Definitely recommend. We can do FaceTime if you're not in LA, but definitely go to Sheffa and check out, especially like the sound healing, the vinyasa, all of it really. Sarah's an amazing teacher. I'm honored to get to share space today, so thank you for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.